Well, mostly in motels, hotels, and in the cities across the country. It's seriously a significant problem nationwide. To hear the stories of some of these young girls during the course of our conversations and the cases that we see, it's probably the most horrific litigation I've seen in my 35 years of practice.
Welcome back to the Injury Pros Podcast, John Cordisco. How are you today?
I'm feeling pretty good, Mike.
All right. Today we're going to talk about a different topic, something that's more serious. And I understand that you just came back from a conference with lawyers from around the country. Today we're going to talk about the topic of sex trafficking. And why don't you just tell our audience, what is sex trafficking and how is that different than, say, prostitution or smuggling or anything like that?
Well, sex trafficking involves, force, fraud, coercion. The victims have no choice. They're forced to perform these acts multiple times, daily. So the control element is the big difference.
Okay. And where are they doing this behavior or this business?
Well, mostly in motels, hotels, and in the cities across the country. It's seriously a significant problem nationwide. To hear the stories of some of these young girls during the course of our conversations and the cases that we see, it's probably the most horrific litigation I've seen in my 35 years of practice.
Wow. So is it like a ring or a kind of a mafia-based or some kind of other like drug ring that's kind of putting the sex trafficking together, like a pimp and a bunch of girls? How is this business ran?
That's an interesting question, Mike. Initially, I thought, well, maybe these girls are runaways or drug addicts and, were unfortunate situations where individuals took advantage of them. In every case, there is what you want to call a pimp or the individual who's controlling what's happening to these girls. And I was surprised to find that in most cases, it was a relationship-based situation whereby these young girls, as young as 13,
wow,
14, 15, and they go on the internet and they connect with a male and a relationship begins. And these guys are very shrewd at what they do. They begin by, buying them gifts and telling them how, special they are and how beautiful they are. And, they take them different places. And at some point, it comes to an end. And this individual, the person in control, basically says to them, listen, I ran out of money doing all this for you. And now I need you to help me. And it begins by saying, I need you to have sex with a friend of mine. And, he's willing to pay us for that. And that's, in many cases, how it begins. And when the girls attempt to stop, this controller from, really forcing them to do something they have no desire to do, the threat comes in a way of, if in fact you don't do this, the harm can come to you. That's the first one. And many of these girls are seen with bruises on their faces, very apparent. And or the threat goes to something will happen to your family. So the girls are now fearful of not obeying these individuals. And they're also told that if we find that you're talking to the police in any capacity, harm will come.
Yeah, you'd be killed, mate.
So it's a fear tactic that obviously in a young girl is very effective.
Do you find these to be like local rings or are they regional, statewide? Do the girls live locally compared to where they're performing these acts? Do you have any information on that?
Well, it's very prevalent in the cities. Los Angeles being the most significant. There's actually a recent story that just came out just said how horrible it is that these young girls are walking down the streets of this one area in Los Angeles. And the police are very frustrated because they don't have the resources to be able to confront this situation. So where you have these motels, you know, they operate out of there. So it's kind of inconspicuous. It's you're under the radar. And it seems to, unfortunately, been very effective.
So are these like local pimps that are recruiting local girls, or are some of them kidnapped? What is it usually like when these rings are busted?
Well, they're local.
Yeah.
And, you know, they, as I said, will either involve themselves with young girls in areas where they may be seen, you know, where they hang out. They may opt, obviously, to go to shelters is another place that they prey upon these girls. And some of these girls end up, you know, experimenting with these drugs. And therefore, the, you know, the these pimps, for lack of better characterization, keep feeding them the pills. And then if, it's another way of, you know, keeping the control over these young girls.
Yeah. So the pimps are taking the girls, or they're meeting at local motels, some hotels, lower end hotels, right? And what do? They rent rooms? How does it work?
Well, actually, the litigation involves some national chains as well. So it's just not this, you know, seedy little motel that, you know, it's kind of nobody wants to even visit in any capacity.
We kind of know bad stuff happens there.
But we know that, but this is not the case. This is very, I want to say, visible motel chains that are involved in this situation. But what they do is they rent a room for an extended period of time. You know, there's a do not disturb element to it for long periods of time. And the people that are working within these motels just seem to turn a blind eye to it. And obviously there's a benefit financially to these institutions because they're renting these rooms for extended period of times. And whether it's multiple rooms or one room, but it's apparent that they chose not to be involved in that situation.
You mean the management of the
management itself chose not to be. Even when housekeeping may bring it to their attention, they still basically have ignored the situation.
What kind of signs would it typically give off when a ring or this kind of activity is occurring in one of the motel rooms? How would they know? What are the signs a motel manager or a cleaning person or somebody there could find that could, you know, lead somebody to believe that there is this illegal activity happening?
Well, I guess it starts right from the beginning. People, you know, these males walking into the motel, you know, or they see cars pulling up, and it's just not one or two. I mean, some of the stories are so bad that these young girls are having sex with maybe 10 to 20 partners a day. So you see that kind of activity.
In and out.
In and out. You know, it's obviously very suspicious. Without sounding crude, I mean, they're, you know, they see the trash can full of, you know, condoms and things of that nature that would, you know, normally under regular circumstances, obviously, you know, would not be, you know, in those trash cans, right?
Yeah.
So in our view, in looking at the evidence involving a lot of these motels, they have unequivocally closed a blind eye to this horrific situation.
So how did all this get started? Did a female that was sex trafficked eventually call the police? The police did an investigation, maybe arrested the pimp or whoever's in control. And then after that, maybe, you know, the person who was sex trafficked, did they come to a lawyer and say, hey, what can we do about this?
Well, believe it or not, they came from some of the males that originally participated in the process or decided not to once they, you know, entered in the room and saw that it was a, you know, teenage girl.
They call him like a John, right? No offense, John.
Yes, pretty much.
But John reported the activity.
Maybe? Yeah, it seems like John gets a bad rap. It's either in a bathroom or, you know, in this kind of a situation. Well, I didn't have a choice, but yeah. It is what it is.
So, obviously, the person in charge of the ring or the pimp or the kingpin, whatever you want to call it, they really can't be sued because they don't really have any cash or assets to go after, right?
Correct.
So then the attention turned on the motel chains, the chains that have these across the country, right?
Correct. I mean, in the mere fact that they're involved in this process, they can be arrested. There's no resources, obviously, there, but they can be arrested, charged, and put in prison where they belong. But, you know, what we've seen up to this point, and just a follow-up from the last question, that it's been, like I said, some of these individuals that decided at the last minute maybe that's not something they want to do, and then they reported that to the local authorities, and, you know, they were able to at least help that individual girl, you know, under those circumstances. And, you know, there are now groups out there that are providing some assistance, but, you know, they'll just move from one motel to the next motel, these characters.
Gotcha. So how do lawyers like us hold motels and hotel chains responsible for this kind of behavior?
Well, you know, we bring them into this action, and because of the negligence that's, you know, been put forth in the way of a statute, which is the Trafficking Victims Protection Act, that they can be held accountable. And when you bring litigation against them and juries hear these horrific stories and punish them with you know, very significant awards, now these institutions, these motels, have to make a choice, you know, whether they want to expose themselves to, you know, that kind of a financial burden. And hopefully they then shut that down and prevents, I guess, at least the easy access. Now these characters have to find a much more, I guess, sophisticated way of dealing with the girls and the individuals that come in to have sex with them.
Yeah. So for me, like just in life, I mean, when you see that activity in a parking lot or at a hotel parking lot or, you know, where that is in a hotel or motel, just from experience, you know, it's like pretty shady stuff. It's kind of obvious that some bad stuff's happening there. I mean, obviously as an individual's not involved with it, you don't want to get involved. You may be there with your family and all, but, you know, looking at all that, you know, it seems that these hotels and motels or the operators of them really took a blind eye to this kind of activity. And it's been going on for years, right?
Yes, and unfortunately, I mean, some of these girls started this when they were 13, 14, they were babies, and spent the next 5, 6 years, some as long as 10 years, kind of a prisoner to this situation. But, you know, at least I'm starting to see a little bit more awareness to this situation. You know, as I was coming back from Las Vegas, where this conference was located, in the airport there are signs to tell people to beware. And you don't have to, you know, do anything that would put you in harm's way. It's just a matter of letting the authorities know that you've seen something unusual and let them take it from there. But I think we all have a responsibility towards doing our part and trying to protect these young girls, because we may be the only chance that they have.
Yeah, so if you see something, you can report it anonymously, right?
That's correct.
And it's up to the local police department or whoever, the task force, that's going to do their full investigation.
That's correct.
And you don't really have to be a witness in those situations because they're going to build their own case, right?
Yeah. I mean, the authorities, at this point, know these characters. They know where they operate, how they operate. So if there's, you know, a chance where they can see them doing this and that's into the process, okay, and they can get the girl out of there, like I said, that's really maybe the only chance you will have of escaping these characters.
Gotcha. So how are these girls affected? I mean, obviously they're traumatized, right? They have post-traumatic stress disorder, I'm assuming. What are the symptoms that these girls have to deal with now, and how long do they have to deal with that? Is that a rest of their life problem?
It's a problem that doesn't go away readily. I mean, they're going to need a lot of counseling and care. And that's a part of the litigation, to provide them the resources to be able to rebuild their lives and try to deal with this. It's so emotionally impactful when you read these cases that even the attorneys, as we were talking, have to have people that have a background in psychology on staff just to work with the staff, because it has such an emotional impact to the people who are working on these cases that they take it home, they think about it. Like I said, in my one day of reviewing, you know, some of these cases, it was very disturbing. It was very disturbing, especially, you know, when you start to think of, you know, I have two daughters, four granddaughters, just girls in general, and, you know, this is somebody's daughter, okay? And what happened, how there was a separation where the parents knew, don't know, you know, it's, but these guys have figured out a way to attract these young girls, obviously, to their web. Yeah. And then, obviously, you know, they become prisoners for years.
So if a parent or grandparent, aunt and uncle, somebody notices that, you know, little Jenny, for example, is having some issues and suspects something like that, what should they do? You know, how should they approach it? Should they talk to Jenny first? Should they go to police? Should they come to a lawyer like you so that you can guide them on what to do next? What do you suggest in that situation?
You know, there's no easy answer, Mike. You know, like I said, having two daughters, and they're wonderful women, but they were teenagers. And, you know, I loved them dearly. You know, we have a tremendous relationship. But during that little window of time when, you know, they're challenging you, and especially as it relates to, I want to date this boy, and maybe the parents go, well, I'm not so sure he's the right guy for you. You know, they can rebel and decide they're going to do it anyway. They may listen to the parents. But I think, you know, parents have to be really aware, especially as it relates to social media, because these characters know how to lure these young girls into the sex trafficking role.
Oh, wow. So you're hearing that some of it starts from social media.
Correct.
Not just hanging out. I know her from the neighborhood. Whatever.
Yes, no.
Wow. That's today's new risk, right?
Yes. That's actually a new risk, because they know how to, you know, say the right things in order to get a dialogue going. And then from the dialogue, there's a meeting. From a meeting, there's a beginning of some type of relationship, all seeming very innocent at the time. Maybe not, you know, they're just impressed with the fact that this person, you know, is that interested in them and willing to give them gifts and things of that nature. So parents just have to be aware for that type of activity that just doesn't seem right, you know, especially, you know, as I said, as when it goes to social media, you know, these individuals aren't necessarily teenagers that are their quote unquote pimps, but they could be guys in their early 20s that are approaching them. They're not like, you know, folks your age. I mean, they're much younger.
Thank you. Appreciate that. I'm not guilty. But so I would assume it's a period of grooming where the trust is being built, kind of like we hear in other sexual assault cases where that pimp or that boss or whatever you want to call it is kind of making that relationship with that, usually a minor female, right? Mm-hmm. Getting them to trust, giving them some benefits, some gifts, getting them to be kind of hooked on that person. And then eventually it leads into some kind of sexual encounter of some sort. And if that person survives that first one, they're probably hooked back into the system, right?
Yeah. It's two words, I guess, I would utilize: trust, as you stated, and fear. You know, it's trust that gets them into the relationship with them, and then it's fear that keeps them there.
Gotcha. So there's lawsuits now across the country, right?
Correct.
And they're trying to hold these chains, mostly chains of motels and small hotels, accountable for allowing this behavior to happen, right?
Yes.
And obviously the lawsuits are brought in the individual person's names, right? The people that were abused, right?
Yes.
So you're able to recover money, damages, that's what we have in our country for this type of behavior, money damages, to compensate those victims. But what else do these lawsuits, what are you going to do with these lawsuits? What's the effect of these lawsuits as a trial lawyer?
As I said, I think that these motel chains and even the smaller motel operations, the franchisees, you know, face real financial consequences. And the idea is, okay, well, if you're not going to stop, we're going to shut you down because we're going to stop this behavior. I think as an attorney, we have a moral obligation to right these wrongs that we know exist.
You're an attorney that I've known for a while now. Obviously, we're partners. You don't take on every case, but you did take on these cases. You are fighting for this cause. Now, what is your overall goal besides money? What is your overall goal? What do you want to see here happen in this industry as a result of these lawsuits?
Well, you know, in the early part of my life, you know, I dealt mostly what we would call one-off cases where an individual was involved in some type of accident. And as you, I guess, mature through that process, you know, you start to take on cases that have some social benefit. And I think that's where I am with my career at this point. You know, I'll still, you know, handle those cases that unfortunately are horrific as a result of some type of accident. But then there's, I think, a common denominator amongst all the attorneys that were at this conference that we're looking out there and saying, okay, whether it's sex trafficking, whether it's somebody utilizing, you know, Roundup, you know, whether it was a 3M earplug case with the military, you know, whether we're talking about contaminated water, you know, trial lawyers play a role in that to try to make society a better place, because corporate greed, you know, in a capitalistic society is very difficult to contain.
Unchecked, right?
Correct. So I believe that we provide that check and that balance. I think it's an obligation for every trial lawyer to look at the world we live in and see how you can make it a better place.
Great. That's some great information, John. I know we'll have probably a follow-up when more information comes in regarding these types of suits and these types of cases. But thanks for coming in today. You know, I appreciate your updates, and we look forward to hearing more about this in the future.
Thanks, Mike.
Thank you, John Cordisco, for coming in and giving your insight and thoughts about this important topic. If you want to learn about any of the articles that we spoke about today, take a look at the show notes. If you want to contact us regarding a sex trafficking case, please contact us at cordiscosale.com. If you want to learn more about the Injury Pros, you can find us on any of the podcast networks or on injurypros.com.